All the time? Fantastic. Great. If you've got your Bibles, you want to turn to Genesis chapter 30. If you haven't and you want one, then stick your hand up. Small group notes are here for those who need them. As Simon says, we are continuing with our series on Jacob, the life of Jacob. And if you've been with us since the start of the year, you would have seen how his life has worked out. Interesting guy, complicated family situations, what you would probably technically call now a dysfunctional family for sure, but one that I'm sure many of us relate to. And we saw a few weeks ago that he had to leave his home and go to his uncle's place because he'd obviously stolen or deceived his father and his brother, and deceived his brother out of his inheritance, out of his blessing, and that didn't please him too much. So Esau vowed to kill Jacob when their father had passed away. So of course, Mum sends Jacob off to Uncle Laban's. On the way, he has this incredible encounter with God, which is a really precious thing, where God just affirms to him the promise that he's made to Abraham, to Isaac, his father, and then to him. And the promise that he's going to be with him. And then he gets to his destination, Laban's. And last week we saw Simon was reminding us just the complications of all those relationships. And that if Jacob thought he was the deceiver, that he was going to be out-deceived by his uncle. It was obvious where this deception obviously runs in the family line, because the trickster was totally tricked, even when it comes to marrying the wrong daughter. And as Simon said, I can't quite get my head around that, how that actually happened, but it did. So we're up to Genesis chapter 30, verse 25. It said, after Rachel gave birth to Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, send me on my way so that I can go back to my own homeland. Give me my wives and children for whom I've served you, and I will be on my way. You know how much work I've done for you. So the first thing we see in this part of Jacob's life is this, that at this moment, after 14 years of being with Laban, Jacob's main desire, his main wish is this, that he wants to go home. After 14 years, he is homesick. He really does want to go home. That's his desire. I wonder if you were to think about where you are on your journey at this very moment in time, I wonder what your number one desire would be. It may be like Jacob, you want to go home. Maybe that actually New Malden, however nice it is, isn't your home. And you would really like to go home at this moment in time. Or maybe you have a desire around family or relationships or about work or where you would like to be, because you're not quite where you thought or hoped you would be at this moment in time. I wonder what your desire would be. God knew Jacob's desire. But it's interesting, when he speaks to Laban, Laban's response is interesting. In verse 27 it says, but Laban said to him, if I have found favor in your eyes, please stay. For I've learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you. Laban's response is that when Jacob says to him, come and let me go, I've done the 14 years, I've fulfilled my obligations. And Laban doesn't argue with that. He acknowledges, he says, yeah, yeah. He said, but why don't you stay? And his desire for Jacob to stay isn't because he loves Jacob like a son-in-law, like a precious, he's like another son to him. It's not because actually he's going to miss his daughters if they go with Jacob, or he's going to miss his grandchildren. It's none of that. It's simply a self-centered, selfish reason. He knows if Jacob goes, that maybe the blessing won't be there anymore. He said it himself. He says, I have found faith. He says, I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you. He's learned through occult practices, through the worship of his gods, that he is blessed because of the God of Jacob. And he acknowledges that. He sees that. So he says to him, name your wages and I'll pay it. Stay. I wonder if anyone's ever said that about you or me. That I recognize that I've been blessed because of you. Like, has anyone ever said that to you? Good. One of us. You know, it's so important, isn't it, that we are a channel of God's blessing to those around us. And how, you know, exciting it is when God, when somebody actually says, acknowledges, I recognize that God has blessed me through your life. That's exactly what Laban was saying. And of course, he was talking from a material, financial, prosperous way. But whatever it is, may we be a channel of blessings to those that we meet. Well, may we introduce others to the one who does the blessing. So Jacob's got a bit of a dilemma here. Laban has actually said to him, name your wages and I'll pay them. Now Jacob is not silly enough to know that, you know, Laban really loves him and wants him to stay because of who he is. It's simply because he wants to stay blessed and he wants to grow and to prosper. But Jacob also realizes that after 14 years, if he was to leave then all he'd be leaving with would be his two wives, his two maidservants, and all his children. Because that was part of the deal that he had with Laban at that time. And he was thinking, you know, not only do I want to go home, but when I do go home, I want to be able to provide for my family. I want to look after my family, and that's a good thing. So Jacob responds by saying in verse 29, you know how I've worked for you and how your livestock has fared under my care. The little you had before I came has increased greatly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I have been. But now, when may I do something for my own household? So he said, it's now time for me, Laban, to do something for my family. I've done this for you in order that you may give me your daughter, Uzzah. But now I need to do something for them. So Laban says, what shall I give you? Jacob responds, don't give me anything. And he makes this deal with him. If you will do this one thing for me, I will go on tending your flocks and watching over them. Let me go through all your flocks today and remove from them every speckled or spotted sheep, every dark-colored lamb, and every spotted or speckled goat. They will be my wages. And my honesty will testify for me in the future that whenever you check on the wages you have paid me, any goat in my possession that is not speckled or spotted, or any lamb that is not dark-colored, will be considered stolen. That's the deal. So Jacob is saying, look, you know, let me have all the defects. Let me have all the ones that are not pure. You know, you look after the ones that, you know, I'll look after them all, but if my wages can be these ones that are not quite right, they're speckled, they're spotted, they're colored, and I can take care of them. Verse 34, Laban thinks this is a great idea. Agreed, said Laban. Let it be as you said. But Laban is just, he just can't help himself. Verse 35, it says, that same day he removed all the male goats that were streaked or spotted, and all the speckled or spotted female goats, and all the dark-colored lambs, and he placed them in the care of his sons. Then he put a three-day journey between himself and Jacob, while Jacob continued to tend the rest of Laban's flocks. So right at the very beginning, Laban takes out all those ones which are already marked, and instead of giving them to Jacob, he gives them to his sons. And the reason behind it is he's thinking that if I take them all out, it's going to be very difficult for those who are already marked when they mate to produce ones who are of like kind. But Jacob has a plan. In verse 37, Jacob, however, took fresh cut branches from poplar, almond, and plane trees and made white stripes on them by peeling the bark and exposing the white inner wood of the branches. Then he placed the peeled branches in all the watering troughs so that they would be directly in front of the flocks when they came to drink. When the flocks were in heat and came to drink, they mated in front of the branches, and they bore young that were streaked or speckled or spotted. Jacob had a plan. We got any people here who are good with sheep, goats, breeding? Is this how you would do it? I mean, in a number of the commentaries, it says that this was completely superstition. But maybe there was another reason. Maybe Jacob was just trying to help God along. But if you go into chapter 31, you see, God speaks to Jacob in a dream, and it's Jacob talking to his wives. In verse 10 of 31, he says, "In the breeding season, I once had a dream in which I looked up and saw that the male goats mating with the flock were streaked, speckled, or spotted. The angel of God said to me in the dream, 'Jacob,' I answered, 'Here I am.' And he said, 'Look up and see that all the male goats mating with the flock are streaked, speckled, or spotted, for I've seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and where you made a vow to me.'" So he had had this dream from God before he came up with this plan. And you're thinking, why on earth would he do that? Because the superstitious belief was that if you had something visually in front of the animals when they were mating, that somehow that would transfer to the babies when they were born. Which seems crazy. But God had already spoken and shown Jacob in this dream. So he goes along with this superstitious practice that was practiced by others in that day as well. And we read that at the very end, it says, of 30, it says, verse 43, it says, "In this way the man grew exceedingly prosperous and came to own large flocks and maidservants and men servants and camels and donkeys." So whether it had anything to do with God blessing him, his strange practice, I would hasten to say that it was God doing it. Because we're soon going to find out later that when God begins to bless Jacob and his flocks begin to grow, that Laban doesn't like it. And he begins to moan and complain. And we see that Jacob decides it's time to leave. In verse 31, we read, "Jacob heard that Laban's sons were saying, 'Jacob has taken everything our father owned and has gained all his wealth from what belonged to our father.' And Jacob noticed that Laban's attitude towards him was not what it had been." It's interesting, in verse 27, Laban is acknowledging that his growth and his prosperity comes through Jacob and because of his God. When it gets to chapter 31, Laban is beginning to talk to others and saying, "Jacob is only prospering because of me. It's all my doing. And he's getting wealthy because of me, and he's taking from me." And he completely forgets that actually this is God at work. And his sons begin to get agitated, and his servants begin to get agitated, just talking about how Jacob is robbing now their father and their master. So Jacob thinks it's time to lose. And he makes this plan to exit, but he makes it out of fear. He calls to his wives in verse 4 of 31. So Jacob sent word to Rachel and Leah to come out to the fields where his flocks were. He didn't want to have this conversation in front of Laban's sons and daughter-in-laws or his servants. So he calls them out into a private place. And he says to him, "See, I see that your father's attitude towards me is not what it was before. But the God of my father has been with me. You know that I worked for your father with all my strength. Yet your father has cheated me by changing my wages 10 times. However, God has not allowed him to harm me. If he said, 'The speckled ones will be your wages,' then all the flocks gave birth to speckled young. And if he said, 'The streaked ones will be your
wages, then all the flocks bore streaked young. So God has given away your father's livestock and has given them to me. So you see where Laban was trying to trick him, trying to deceive him, move the goalpost the whole time. Every time that he could see that Jacob was prospering, he would suddenly change and go, okay, now I'm going to have the speckled ones and you can have the streaked ones. And God just made the young ones, they were all streaked. And then when he changed again, well, I'm going to have the streaked ones and you can have the black ones. Now, whatever he did, God made sure that Jacob was okay. And Laban, it must have infuriated him. Rachel and Leah's response to Jacob was this: do we still have any share in the inheritance of our father's estate? Does he not regard us as foreigners? Not only has he sold us, but he has also used up what he paid for us. Surely all the wealth that God took from our father belongs to us and our children. So do whatever God has told you to do. You can sense that Leah and Rachel are a little bit disgruntled with their father. You know, there's this kind of bitterness that is coming up. They sense that actually their father just used them in a deal with Jacob to get what he wanted. That he wasn't interested in them. He wasn't taking care of them. He wasn't even going to leave anything for them. So the response is like, we mean nothing to him, so you just do what God has told you to do. So then Jacob put his children and his wives on camels, and he drove all his livestock ahead of them, along with all the goods he had accumulated in Padan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. But there was something else that happened. In verse 19, when Laban had gone to shear his sheep, Rachel stole her father's household gods. Moreover, Jacob deceived Laban the Aramean by not telling him he was running away. So he fled with all he had. Crossing the river, he headed for the hill country of Gilead. So we see two things. That Jacob leaves out of fear. And the fear must have been great, because actually the thought of going back to his home, although he was wanting to go home, the thought of it probably was a little bit mixed, because obviously his brother was there. But the fear to leave must have been greater. But then Rachel decides that she's going to steal her father's gods. Why did she do that? Did she do that because she was actually worshipping, idolizing those false gods? Possibly. Or maybe it was literally just out of spite. Maybe she thought they were worth something. Maybe she felt entitled to them because her father had just given her away. Without anything else. For whatever reason, she takes him. And Jacob makes his exit without telling Laban, with all his family and with all his livestock. Now, of course, Laban finds out, says in verse 22, on the third day, Laban was told that Jacob had fled. Taking his relatives with him, he pursued Jacob for 7 days and caught up with him in the hill country of Gilead. Then God came to Laban the Aramean in a dream and that night and said to him, be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad. But eventually they meet each other again, and there is this big conversation, this big disagreement. Laban says to Jacob, what have you done? You've deceived me. That's a bit rich, isn't it? Laban saying to Jacob, you've deceived me, and you've carried off my daughters like captives in war, as if all of a sudden he's worried about them. Why did you run off secretly and deceive me? Why didn't you tell me so that I could send you away with joy and with singing to the music of tambourines and harps? You didn't even let me kiss my grandchildren and my daughters goodbye. It's a real sob story, isn't it? And yet, it's just deception. The very next line, he says, you've done a foolish thing. I have the power to harm you. So that's exactly why Jacob didn't tell him. Because he knew he wouldn't be pleased. But here God intervenes again. He says, I have the power to harm you, but last night the God of your father said to me, be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad. So God intervenes again on behalf of Jacob and speaks to Laban and says, don't you touch him. Now you've gone off because you long to return to your father's house, says Laban. But why did you steal my gods? Jacob answered Laban, I was afraid because I thought you would take your daughters away from me by force. But if you find anyone who has your gods, he shall not live. In the presence of our relatives, see for yourself whether there is anything of yours here with me. And if so, take it. Now Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen the gods. He's totally unaware. So Laban went into Jacob's tent and into Leah's tent and into the tent of the two maidservants, but he found nothing. After he came out of Leah's tent, he entered Rachel's tent. Now Rachel was taking the household gods, who had taken the household gods, had put them inside her camel's saddle and was sitting on them. Laban searched through everything in the tent but found nothing. Rachel said to her father, don't be angry, my lord, that I cannot stand up in your presence. I'm having my period. So he searched but could not find the household gods. Did Rachel really respect these things? Probably not. She was sitting on them, claiming to have a period. And if you had a period in those days, you were unclean. And to be that close to these gods would not have been a good thing. It becomes clear that she takes them because it's out of spite. She wants to get back at her father. And maybe she even thinks that this is how he gets his knowledge information, and she just wants to make sure that he can't worship him anymore. I wonder, you ever found yourself in that situation? Verse 36, Jacob was angry and took Laban to task. It all starts coming out. What is my crime? He asked Laban. What sin have I committed that you hunt me down? Now that you have searched through all my goods, what have you found that belongs to your household? Put it here in front of your relatives and mine and let me judge between the two of us. I have been with you for 20 years. And now we're going to get 20 years worth of anger and disappointment and resentment that's built up over 20 years. It's all going to come out. He says, I've been with you for 20 years. Your sheep and goats have not miscarried, nor have I eaten rams from your flocks. I did not bring you animals torn by wild beasts. I bore the loss myself, and you demanded payment from me for whatever was stolen by day or night. This was my situation. The heat consumed me in the daytime and the cold at night, and sleep fled from my eyes. It was like this for the 20 years I was in your household. I worked for you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flocks, and you changed my wages 10 times, and there's more, and there's more. It's just pouring out of Jacob. It all comes out. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been with me, you would have surely have sent me away empty-handed. And he's probably right. It all comes out. But still, even in the midst of this, Jacob is able to say, but God has seen my hardship and the toil of my hands, and last night he rebuked you. All this stuff, all this anger, all this bitterness have built up over years of all those relationships that we were looking at last week. I wonder, if someone's to press the right button in you, would anything like this come up? You know, in any family relationships, there's all kinds of issues that develop over many, many years, all kinds of divisions, all kinds of things that separate us.
And we know, of course, as Christians, that we are commanded, called to forgive and to keep short accounts with both God and with one another. And that's part and parcel of what it means to walk with Christ, to follow Christ, isn't it? Jesus says, forgive those who sin against you. Forgive as I've forgiven you. It's part and parcel of what it truly means to follow Christ, to let go. And yes, not easy. Even at times when you think you've done it and you think you've dealt with that, you've forgiven, you let go, someone just happens to mention something and something comes from deep within. It just rises up and just comes out, normally through our speech. Because it's deep within us, it's deep buried in our heart, it's in our gut. And although we may have verbally said we forgive, that it still has a stronghold within us. Can anyone relate to that? Or is it just me? You know, you think you dealt with it, and then somebody says something years later, and you realize, actually, it's painful. I want to introduce you to a special family member. Do you remember who this is? Who's this? Anyone remember his name? It's Nelson. Nelson. I had to wait till I was 38 to get hold of him. But he was worth a crunchy bar, wasn't he? He was worth two crunchy bars, don't you think? And, you know, the funny thing was, when we were clearing out my mum's place, we found loads of things, but I found Nelson. And I thought, I'm going to get him. I got him. But you know what I did? Bless him. For the last 10 years, he's been in a box in the loft. And he was really dirty. So he's been in the washing machine this week. And he's come out really good. I think he's looking really good, isn't he? Fantastic, isn't he? Now, before you're wondering really what's going on there, it's I haven't got deep psychological problems. Well, I may have. But things can happen years ago. That's still within us. And because we refuse to let go, and they just have a stronghold, and you know, God doesn't want us to live like that. He wants us to be free. He wants his blessing to be upon us. How was Jacob and Laban going to sort this issue out? Because they were disagreeing. Laban even answered to Jacob, these women are my daughters, the children are my children, the flocks are my flocks. All you see is mine. You see, he's suddenly forgotten it was God who did the blessing. Yet what can I do today about these daughters of mine or about these children that they have born? But he says the most sensible thing here in verse 44. This is Laban. He says, come now, let's make a covenant, you and I, and let it serve as a witness between us. So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. He said to his relatives, gather some stones. So they took stones and piled them in a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Laban said, this heap is a witness between you and me today. That is why it's called Gilead. It was also called Mizpah, because he said, may the Lord keep watch between you and me when we are away from each other. Verse 51, he said, here is this heap and here is this pillar I've set up between you and me. This heap is a witness and this pillar is a witness that I will not go past this heap to your side to harm you, and that you will not go past this heap and pillar to my side to harm me. May the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us. So Jacob took an oath in the name of the fear of his father Isaac. He offered a sacrifice there in the hill country and invited his relatives to the meal.
After they'd eaten, they spent the night there. Then early the next morning, Laban kissed his grandchildren and his daughters and blessed them. Then he returned home. They were in disagreement. They were seeing things from totally different perspectives. But Laban, for all his fault, didn't want to leave it like that. And Jacob didn't want to leave it like that. And they made this covenant, this important agreement between them, that they would not bring harm to one another or to one another's families. It was a bit of a division because it said, you will not go past this boundary and I will not go past that boundary. So it wasn't perfect, but it was a place where they could move on from at that time. This morning, I want to say this. If there's anyone here who knows deep in their heart of hearts that there is a barrier, that there is something that is not good, that is a blockage from them moving on, as they're making their way home, Jacob was making his way home. Every single one of us are making our way home. One day we have the promise that we will be with God forever. We're on this journey. This is not our home. Our home is with God. And we're on our way home. And yet so many things come our way to stop us and to cause barriers and to cause hurt and pain. Maybe this morning you want to make peace. You want to make a pillar. You want to put some stones that mark as that this is the day that I made this decision. That this is the day I'm going to let it go. That this is the day I'm going to forgive. That this is the day that I'm going to move forward into God's blessing in even greater ways. God had made this promise to Jacob back in chapter 28. He'd said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All the peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I've done what I promised you. God had made that promise to Jacob, and he knew that God would be faithful. But it was all about God's grace. Jacob left Laban's household blessed because of God. Not because of anything he did, but simply because of God's grace was upon him. And he was making his way home. God will fulfill his blessings upon you. He will fulfill his promises to you despite what you do. But we can be freer from pain if we choose to be obedient to his commands. May we pray. If the band would like to come back.